And now this from the Main Street Radio Show on Prairie Public.
I'm Doug Hamilton with Ashley Thornburg and Chef Tim Rosendahl. It's time to talk about food, and we've got a meaty topic today.
And I hope there are no alectorophobics out there. Did I say that properly? The fear of chickens? Alectorophobia?
Well, I've never come run into a person who had that fear. Everybody loves chicken.
In every way, actually. So give us a little history of this wonderful animal.
You know, the origin of chickens goes way back to Asia and all parts of Asia and many years before us. But the first writings of chickens were back to Greece in the 5th century B.C. So we're talking chickens been around for a long, long time. And one of the most surprising statistics that I've heard, and I've heard this many times over many years, is that we in America, and we are the largest producer of chickens in the world, and we can produce billions of pounds per year, over 37 billion pounds a year, and we are the largest producer in the world. But I've heard over and over that we have the capability of feeding the world with chicken. So when we talk about hunger and we talk about starvation and we talk about different countries that are impoverished, I hear over and over that chicken could easily be the cure for that. But understand also that when you go to the grocery store, has chicken ever been gone up in price? I mean, yes, it goes up in price a little bit, but it's never reached, you know, I think nothing of paying $28.99 a pound for swordfish, or I think nothing of paying $25 a pound for filet mignon. But chicken just hovers in there at $1 and $2, and it's an amazing bird. And one of the interesting things is that a chicken, an average chicken in this country, can lay about 250 eggs a year. And one of the things that they used to say in ancient Greece and Asia was that chicken is known as the bird that can give birth every day. That alone, when you think about it, is pretty miraculous.
That's valuable.
Yeah, how does that happen? Of course, the incubation period is 21 days. So when they drop that egg every day, it becomes ready for eating immediately. And, of course, the feed and the temperature and the light and, you know, we trick birds into thinking that there's more days. You know, sun only comes up one time a day and goes down once a day. But there are chicken farmers that trick them into making a 12-hour day or a 20-hour day just to get them to get into the mode of dropping more eggs.
And they will just lay more eggs
if you
artificially have a sunrise and sunset?
It's not an on-off switch, no. But you can make adjustments, yes.
Okay. Wow. Well, there are lots of different ways we can describe chickens, the gender being the one we're usually eating is the female, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the female is the one-year-old, and that's the pullet. And that's probably the most common size. When we think of the rooster or the cock male, it's a castrated, and that's also known as a capon. Now, some of these terms, I remember seeing them in the grocery store all the time, and now you see chicken.
Yeah.
But I remember in delis in New York and delis in Miami Beach, you could buy pullets and capons and cocks and hens and roosters. And there was all of those different separations of different sizes of the bird, sizes and gender of the bird. And I just want to make one important point here, and that is, yes, you can buy organic chicken, you can buy free-range chicken, you can buy grass-fed chicken, and all of those are very important. They will make a much better bird. But I'm also here to say, like so many other meats, it's much more important that you marinate properly and cook properly. Because I can take the breast of a stewing chicken, a big, massive stewing chicken breast, and if I slice that thin and cook it right, it will be every bit as tender as a much smaller chicken breast. So it's back to marination and cooking method. You know, if you boil something long enough, you can make it tough. If you don't add any marinade, you can make it flavorless. But there is something about a grass-fed organic chicken that you can just roast on the grill by itself and taste it, and wow, is that good.
I can remember as a kid, my mother from the South making a fried chicken on Sunday for four hungry boys, and my dad was no piker either. I don't know how she did it, and she used lard.
Sure.
So I could do a chicken all by myself at that time.
You know, it's, and we eat all parts of the bird. You know, if we're, we're pretty set on the wings and the thighs and the breasts and the legs, and that's it. But let's not forget the coxcomb, or is that little comb on the top of their head. And then, and if you go to any classical French cookery, whether it's Pellepraw or Escoffier, you will find a lot of recipes for coxcombs. And you'll also find recipe for the wattles. And the wattles are what hang under the beak. And that's another, you'll find many recipes in the King of Chefs book, the Escoffier cookbook. So well, they use the whole bird.
If you go to Asia, you'll find more chicken feet than chicken legs.
Oh, chicken feet, absolutely. And, you know, that's the more tendons, the more bones, the more there is, we're going to get a lot more flavor. You have to, there are a lot of work. You have to pick through those bones, but boy, are they good.
Well, we get a lot of expressions from chickens, too. We say pecking order about people, even though for the most part, people aren't pecking.
Yeah, and it's interesting where that's where that word pecking order comes from. And because chickens are a very gregarious bird, and they're very, their personalities, the noises that they make, and their showing of strength by size and how they make noises gives them that pecking order. And the pecking order decides who gets fed first, who gets to breed with the right hen, who has, you know, so it's all of those things go into I'm the king of the flock. I am
the alpha male.
Yeah, the alpha male, exactly. But it's interesting where that pecking order, we use it in so many other parts of the language, but it comes from the chicken.
In your research on this, did you ever come across why the phrase tastes like chicken is ubiquitous? I mean, anytime someone says, oh, I've had moose, it tastes like chicken. I've
or
had
frog
squirrel,
or
it tastes like chicken.
Yeah.
Like nothing tastes like anything else, but everything tastes like chicken.
No, that is a pretty interesting statement because we overuse that all the time just because we got somebody stuck that with us. And, you know, I guess maybe the texture, sometimes I would say it has the texture of chicken, but then I'll say it's much more gamey, it's much more earthy, it's much more, it tastes a lot of greens or salad, or but sometimes it's the texture of meat because there's a lot of different meats that have that stringy texture of chicken, so maybe that's where it came from.
Because when you go to a restaurant, that you know, you'll have your various course options, that chicken one will be huge.
Well, that's because of the price. It's because of, you know, has anybody ever come across anybody who just says, I don't care for chicken? Now, if they're a vegetarian or things like that, absolutely. But I don't think I've ever met a person that says chicken is off my list. I don't like chicken. So it's kind of interesting because of the price and because of how much everybody likes it. It stays on the menu in a big way, and it's you can always serve chicken at a banquet because you've got 3,000 people eating. And if we put shrimp or we put salmon or we put other things, we're going to have 10% or 20% that don't like it. But chicken, it's safe.
It's safe if we cook it to what temperature?
Well, that's a little bit of a point. That's your opening Pandora's box there a little bit because, yes, chicken have been known to have lots of salmonella. There was a time when we said that about 70% of all chicken has salmonella bacteria in it because of the way they're bred, because of the way they're washed, because of the way that they're skinned. And yes, you do need much more dangerous than the cooking of the chicken to over 160 degrees, which you should do all the time. There is no chicken sushi out there, sorry. But the more important than that is the juice from the chicken because when you're handling raw chicken, whether you have it in the grocery bag and maybe it's in a container that is dripping chicken on your radishes, that's where the danger comes in because now you have the raw chicken juice. So that you have to be very careful of. And it's called that secondhand contamination. So when the cutting board that you cut the chicken on, the knife, the cutting board has to be sanitized. It has to be. We have much more problem with secondhand contamination than we do of the cooking. But I'll also end that by saying that doesn't mean we cook chicken until there's no juice in it and it has the consistency of the bottom of your shoe leather. 165 is 165. And that means if we take it off at 155, we're probably going to get there either way. So you don't cook it till there's no juice left in it. There is an art to cooking chicken, and it is a very fine line of it's done and now it's just going downhill. It gets better, and then it starts going the other direction.
And if you fry it like my mother did, it's got calories.
Yeah, you know, chicken starts off being a very pretty healthy product for a meat product in caloric content and cholesterol and fat. You know, it's one of the lowest fat proteins that we have out there. But we seem to always want to fry it or broast it or serve it with a sauce with cream or butter or bacon or cheese or fat or fat or fat. So that makes it good. Chicken is a good carrier for a lot of other things, sauces and bacons and things like that.
Well, bon appetit for chicken. If you have a question for Chef Rosie,
send it to Main Street at prairiepublic.org or find us on Facebook. We are Main Street at Prairie Public.